even if I tumble fall.
Hey now, everybody, welcome to a special episode of the Movie Mavericks podcast. I'm Trevor Anderson. I'm going to send you over to Jason Rugard. He's going to tell you what we're doing today.
We've got episode two, season one, episode two, of course, that is of Entourage, as we go through and watch old Entourage episodes. I don't know, Trevor and I love this show. We want to go back and watch this. This gave us an excuse. We want to talk to you guys about it as we do it. You can either watch with us or listen to us as we watch it. I know that sounds confusing, but
you can't watch us while we listen to it.
Oh, that's true. Ooh. We found an angle we haven't exploited yet. We'll get there. We'll put this on YouTube at some point, I'm sure, but we'll get yanked down. But it's better than getting yanked up. Let's a little backstory on this episode. This premiered July 25th, 2004. It had 1.8 million viewers in the U.S., which doesn't sound like a lot, but for HBO at the time, which needed a hit as The Sopranos was waning in popularity, this came out swinging. The season high would be 2.15 million, and that would be episode 4, so we'll get to that. But this was growing on its lead from last week. This episode is titled The Review, and I think we should start now. Did you see any of these first run, or was this all by my doing later on when I had the DVDs and you came over?
Not first run. I don't know how many of these I actually watched first run. I mean, HBO plays, obviously, all their crap all the time.
Yeah, I think I said in the last episode, I caught this on demand. My first experience with on demand in a DVR.
And I mostly watch this with you, so.
Yeah, and I got my hands on, I can't recall if this was in the early days of finding things on the internet, or if I had the actual, like, DVD copy if somebody had or something. But we were watching these in film school in Die and Laugh, and I feel like these had almost a special relevance for us because we were living down in Southern California at the time, mm-hmm. and you still do, obviously. But you know, in this, we were in the Argyle Hotel, which is prominently displayed in this opening montage. We were on the top of that thing at one point filming, where they filmed The Italian Job and many other movies. So I always felt a bit of kinship to the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, being in film school and having a show about film, hell yeah, and it's the fun part of film too.
Yeah, it's the fantasy part of film. I mean, this is, like you said, the male fantasy come to life, a show that could only really exist in the Me Too movement, or pre-Me Too movement, because this is a very offensive show. I don't think this gets greenlit today, but it's funny. This is a funny show. I mean, the vagina monologues bit here, with drama, right. I don't think that makes it past censors today on HBO.
Yeah, I'm sure it does. I don't know. Really? I feel like it does. If anything, I mean, over the past decade, right, standard TV, not even cable TV, but just regular TV has kind of gotten a lot more vulgar.
You're right. I mean, that started with NYPD Blue back in the day, showing Dennis.
That's right. The butt.
Remember that? Yeah, that was like the big thing when we were kids. Like, they showed an ass on network television, and it wasn't even an attractive ass. Kevin Dillon here is showing that he is not only the center of this scene, but I think the center of the show in a lot of ways. He was as instrumental in making this a hit as any other character. I mean, Ari, I think, would be the only other comparable character. I think Ari and Drama are the reasons people mostly watch the show, right?
Yeah, I mean, they're I guess, would be the Kramer of the show, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of his role. I don't know, technically, who else would Ari be like? I don't know. But yeah, you're right. I mean, they almost have their own kind of world that they live in and kind of crash into this world. And then really the other three guys in this group are kind of not crazy, I guess is the word to say, right? Because, I mean, technically, he's a little out of it.
Yeah, and that's why we love him, though. I mean, I love the fact that
he's
the older.
Right, exactly. He's zany. Crazy.
Here, and in this episode, Vince gets the review for his movie that premiered in the first episode, mm-hmm. and they are not kind. And as we'll see in a couple scenes, this is the episode where Ari and Eric's confrontational attitudes towards one another really come to a head, but you have to respect Ari in this situation because he knows this game. It shows that Eric is out of his depth, and Vince's I don't care attitude which will be something that gets him in trouble later seasons.
Time and time again.
It becomes a little obnoxious in this episode, I thought. I never really thought that he wouldn't be unconcerned.
We're still feeling out, right, the show at this point, but I really think this is a fantastic second episode. I'm just watching them walk into this office area here where they're going to do time and time again, you know, even if the office setting changes. Right. I mean, so much is established in this past the pilot, right? I mean, we're really getting into the depths of what this season's going to be about. And I like that they get this kind of out of the way, this fight between Ari and wanting to get a real manager, right? Wanting to get Eric out of there so he doesn't have to deal with him anymore, which was introduced in the episode before. But here it really kind of comes to a head and kind of you blow past it a little bit for the next couple episodes.
It introduces a couple of female interests here, too. The last one was very male-heavy, right. And now we have Emily, Ari's assistant, and there's a little chemistry between her and Eric. We just saw the character of Justine, and Britney Spears, thank you. And the pop star, the virginal pop star who's got a thing for Vince, and you don't know if the virgin part of that pop star is media made up for fans or if that is truly her thing, so... The boys are talking about that for a bit, and there's always an Ocean's 11's kind of vibe to me when I see them walking like that. Do you know what I mean by that? Yeah. Like the guys that are Rat Pack in a sense. And
well, they're arriving, they right? They're coming in. They, you know, stuff. Something's going to happen, but it's really nothing very great. I mean, here they've walked in super suave and cool, and here they are just lined up sitting on this couch having to wait for their to go talk to Ari. And, of course, they're not even going to all be able to go in, right? Because they're in his entourage.
I believe this is the episode that introduced the infamous line, "Hug it out, bitch." Isn't this right at the end of this one? Where Ari scolds Eric here. But drama, setting up that drama is not only a bad actor, but a nervous actor who will do anything just to perform, though. So he's an enthusiastically bad actor.
So juvenile, I find it funny.
I love the fact that in real life, Jerry Ferreira and Kevin Dillon, they were best man at each other's wedding because it makes sense. They have so many scenes together, the way it's written, that they spent a lot of time on set together as actors.
Mm-hmm.
I just love that little real-life touch there. Who wouldn't love to be in this situation, though? And fear it at the same time. You know, your first movie's out, you're an actor of some note, people are talking about you, but it's negative? I mean...
Yeah, but he's such a cool guy. He kind of tries to play it off like it doesn't bother him, right? I mean, isn't that what this episode kind of sets up with Vince, I thought? Like, because he does, in the future, we'll find out that he's a guy that actually does care what people think, even though he tries to just pretend like it's not. And this episode kind of introduces that.
This is written by Doug Ellen, the series co-creator, and it shows. Doug Ellen would get less involved as the series went on, and I think that the cracks in the show, when it starts losing steam later on down the line, it's because of him being the showrunner and not taking full charge of it. There's other episodes that he co-wrote that are very good in this season, but him alone writing this, he has these characters' voices, obviously, down pat here.
Well, it does get more dramatic, without him, I guess you would say.
He has a Seinfeld style of writing in the fact that it seems not to be going anywhere. A lot of this is they're just kind of fucking around.
But it does get, yeah, but it is all intertwined still.
It lands. Yeah, it still lands. I mean, this got a great soundtrack too to this show. I think the soundtrack goes underrated. Yeah. This is the episode with the Gangstar work. Yeah, a lot of beautiful is in this. I believe it ends with Jay-Z's 99 Problems. Did a good job of music supervising on this. And this is the scene where Ari nervously explains that they're in a panic here.
Yeah, you gotta treat the talent with kid gloves, right?
But internally, that this could all go away with one bad review. And that's how precious of a thing that they're dealing with. Even though Eric trying to be nonchalant like Vince is in a way.
Yeah, he definitely learns not to be that way, though.
You talk about how dated this show is now. Vince loses out to a Colin Farrell for an action hero job.
Well, but when you think about this show does do a good job, and you call that dated, certainly, but they're still equal, both him and Arian, or whatever the actual actor's name, right, and Colin Farrell, they're probably about equal today. It's about equal as they were would be back then, you know, in this fictional universe.
Colin Farrell's not getting many opportunities to headline anymore.
Where's this guy?
Yeah.
Where's Vince in real life? You know, that's my point. Is that even but back then he would have been a good if he's coming up, Colin Farrell would have been somewhat hot at that time, right?
I like this actor. I always like this actor. And I
Arian Grainer, what is his name? I can't remember.
I think it's Adrian Grenier.
Thank you. Yeah. God, yes.
And I like this kid. Yeah. This guy, he's our age, I guess. And the fact of the matter is, there's a great use of music in this scene with that shot going to this photo session. If they had used anyone more famous, it would have been distracting to me. I think that his level of fame was perfect for being cast in this role because he wasn't a guy you had seen everywhere. He was an actor that was good looking enough and kind of had that look that he was as a pretty boy, but maybe not much talent behind it, you know, what they thought of Marky Mark when he was first coming up. So this has always been, you know, I love this exchange here when he says, "Don't do it, Vince." And the guy looks at him and says, "Do it, Vince." You know, just
this is the episode where they introduce the whole, the Vince's money issues, right? Yeah, that he's impulsive and he spends a lot of money, and then because I believe he returns this at the end of this show. This episode, right? And he does this. They do this constantly, where he just kind of like rolls over and gets new houses and crap throughout the whole show.
He also can't make a decision.
Yeah,
he looks to them all and says, like, "What do you think I should do?" And he seems to be always doing everything by the seat of his pants.
And that's, you know, goes with his love life to his work life as well, not just here where he's spending money on Rolls Royce, right?
But does that make Vince the interesting character because he doesn't have a designated career path like, say, somebody like Tom Cruise would have had, who would have been making all these suave business decisions? And I love the fact that he says, "I hate this new car smell," and they're blazing a blunt right in the rolling down Melrose. But doesn't that make it a more interesting character that he is fly by night and he's flighty in a lot of ways
at this point, you want to have some space for this show to go someplace, right? So yeah, it works out really well here. I think that if he was on a career path and like Tom Cruise, who, you know, did take him a moment to get on that path, so this would have been in Tom Cruise's career, this would have been before Top Gun, right? But still, yeah, I'd have to agree. Because once Cruise does Top Gun, it's pretty much set in stone, right? What he's going to be doing.
I would say Risky Business. This would have been like after Risky Business. But that got such great reviews. So to me, it's always fear. Like that first head-on movie is supposed to be Fear. And this is Wahlberg before he hit with Boogie Night. And then with the big blockbusters after that, Perfect Storm and all that kind of stuff that would be coming in his future. And this is really the pilot part two. And Marvin, this is one of my favorite characters in this movie.
This is what I was talking about.
Deals with.
No, yeah, always sends Eric. And poor Marv, good God. He's always like, "Stop spending money, stop."
I mean, I believe this is, we're talking, getting ahead of ourselves, but when they have their meeting, and he brings up to him, "What are you paying this guy for if you don't listen to him?" It's I mean, hanging out, poolside in your house, not a care in the world. I mean, these guys, the future doesn't look too bright for the rest of them besides Vince, if you ask me.
Yeah.
Like, the actor who plays Marv here is fantastic. But a lot of this shit is recycled in Ballers. I'm going back and rewatching Ballers. Did you ever get into that?
Oh, yeah, no. It does have a very Entourage vibe to it, even a look to it.
But the fact that you lease, you don't buy. Stephen Levinson, right, who is involved in both of these, Ballers and Entourage.
People with a lot of money, basically. Right. High testosterone.
The same issues, you know, getting in trouble in the public eye and having to make amends to higher-ups and things like that. And there's a lot of crossover there, which I think was intentional the first season.
Right. Well, it's a Peter Pan complex, especially in this show. Probably in Ballers.
I love when he tells them nobody can take that many vitamins and still be alive. And get him an unlimited plan for the weekends. It's just, I mean, this guy Marvin's going to have a heart attack.
Yeah.
There's only 8 episodes this first season. It's a really condensed season, and they fit so much into it. I love when he tells them this. Hey, relax, guy. Not so close. Showing Eric in that car was a nice touch. Showing Eric in his beat-up Honda that he's still driving and right. The boys rolled up in the Bentley is a nice touch. Because Eric is the only one out of these guys that isn't really enjoying the life, right? Isn't Eric, quote-unquote, the worry wart?
Yeah, well, but much like because we saw the show's establishing, right, he's the behind-the-scenes guy. So he has to be that buffer between Ari and Vince, right, who has to sit there with Vince and kind of nudge him and get him to do things, but at the same time knows all the reality of if this fails, you know, what's going to happen. And he almost has no control over this situation at this point and a lot of situations throughout the show, but there's a lot of tension and most of the tension that builds between him and Vince are those areas where he can affect change, right? Because he wants to be Vince's fucking manager.
He's the only one that doesn't take it for granted. And I believe he's true. Also the only one that would be okay if this shit hit the fan. They were all sent back to their previous lives. God, Jessica Alba looks good back in the day. I mean, she still does today. No disrespect,
she looks great,
Jessica
Alba, yeah.
Out there. but good, my goodness, just an absolute doll. And setting the tone for the celebrity drop-ins that are acting as if Vince is a real-life star of their caliber, you know?
Yeah, and I do like that they use actual people. I like that they do have fictional characters. Obviously, we saw Justine and whatnot, but I do like that they use these people as themselves.
Yeah, it adds to the realism of the show, even though this is like a fantasy of the highest order here.
Right, yeah. But
I always wondered how they talk these people into playing themselves and not wanting to play a character. It must be very boring to play yourself as an actor. To go on set for a day or half a day, however long it takes this, and just be yourself.
I don't know. It might be super easy.
Oh, I'm sure it's and they probably get right? a nice little paycheck for that. But on the first season of Entourage, figuring they're shooting this, nobody knows what the hell this is. It must have done a lot of convincing to get people to come do this.
Well, let's be fair. We're talking about Jessica Alba here. She seems to be up for a lot of stuff. I think she's great. Nothing against her, but she does take a lot of roles and a lot of smaller stuff. She's kind of, especially around 2004.
Yeah, things started slipping there. This is an iconic scene, not only within the first season, I think within the series. The virgin talk, Vince loses virginity to. They're picking up some wine to go to the party at Jessica Alba's house. And it's, they all give their stories. Of course, drama is a nightmare. And Vince claims he doesn't remember who his first was. Eric doesn't buy it. And this is a great scene here, I think. It blocked very well. Like a well-directed scene. Julian Ferrano directed this episode.
Yeah, well, and that's HBO, right? Things are shot like a movie. Literally.
And these guys are wrestling around in a wine store. It's so the kind of douchebaggery shit that would annoy me now but crack me up. Like, you know, that's the show's so bro-y.
Yeah, I know.
It's one, the definition of a bro show. Even these shots. But once again, it's the Rat Pack.
Well, it's it's just a party, right? It's a party. What a generic party.
It really is.
Okay, extras, act like you're having fun.
Meanwhile, there's no music, there's nothing. Don't stare at Jessica Alba too long.
Yeah, why are there so many girls at this party?
Because in reality it'd be
do you
flipped.
See this?
Yeah, it's only female.
I mean, there's pockets right of there. Guys, but for the most part, I'm seeing a lot of girls.
Is it weird in the later episodes when Turtle loses all that weight?
I don't know if it's weird or not, because he still has the same kind of frame and build of a fat guy.
Yeah.
But it's just as weird, I guess, as anyone else losing weight, especially people
Kevin
who
Smith right now.
Yeah, who he seems like he's a fat guy. You know what I mean? Like Jonah Hill, even skinny Jonah Hill. You look at him and you think you're a fat guy. You can tell. The same with Ferreira here.
Sorry, I was mesmerized by watching Abba with the lollipop.
Oh, as right. always.
Yeah, exactly. And Ari making the move to try to snake her away from her agent, mm-hmm. and getting his shot in on her. I mean, him telling her that she deserves a statue, please. In what reality would Jessica Alba ever win an Oscar? Yeah, an MTV. Do you think this is better than the pilot, this episode?
Oh, yeah, for sure, because this dives into it. The pilot's a bit... I guess like all pilots, right? It's kind of like, is this going to work or not? Is this show going to take off? And this episode is like, don't worry about the future. You know, here's some shit. I love it. Yes.
Faustino.
Fucking David Faustino. I forgot he was in this.
Anytime there's a Bud Bundy appearance, you got to love it.
Oh, it's great. I mean, Johnny Drama's circle of celebrities that he exists in is one of the highlights of the show for me, because yeah, I know for a fact that this shit's real. Like, there's different rings of people.
Well, I mean, I think you can take a break here and tell your David Faustino versus Lou Ferrigno story.
Oh, yes. Well, I was at a comic convention at one point, and they did have tables there across from each other, signing autographs and whatnot. And there was like a damn near a scuffle, I guess. I almost can't remember what it was now. Do you remember what the hell I said it was?
They were yelling at each other, you told me, from like
they
across
were.
The
it,
way.
I can't remember why now, though. It was very odd. Like, there was almost a fight, basically, between the two of them. And it was interesting. Obviously, Lou Ferrigno is practically deaf. And so it was a very weird... just a weird thing to have. I mean, Faustino's tiny.
Yeah.
And Ferrigno's like huge. Yeah. It would have been a quick fight. So
that wouldn't have been too good for Bud Bundy. I mean, here's the setup for, is Vince going to do it? Is Vince not going to do it? She wants him to do it, but not now, right? And Eric, once
this is
again,
such a great shot.
Realizing... in the moment
at a,
what they have.
At all, any Hollywood party in any movie or show, there's always this shot where people come out by the pool and look out over the city, right?
Because we and I have been to houses like this in the hills.
I know.
Like that.
But everyone always gets this shot during the party scene. There's always that secluded area where the people go out and talk about shit, you know?
And meditate on it. And Vince reveals that he lost his virginity to Eric's cousin. Which he was probably going to take to the grave until this whole thing came up. And he's true. Eric does look miserable. But he's the only one that's accountable.
Well, it's such a fake party. Look at these people behind them. I can't imagine these conversations people are having. This looks totally fake. This is one of the most staged parties I've ever seen in my life. Look at this dude. Look at these guys dancing. Look at this guy dancing on the right-hand corner here.
Yeah, I know, right?
Good God.
And he told everyone he got a big break. He's like, I got a big break going on. And his buddy next to him in the black, they're just like, yeah, dance together. And they're on the same rhythm.
There's so many women. Right there's now. So many women. Look at these two guys. Yeah.
Yeah, we're supposed to be talking about the show. We're now being distracted by extras dancing badly.
Look where we are. You're at one of the most boring parties I've ever seen.
Yeah, but the whole, did you ever think we'd have this, enjoy it? I mean, who doesn't want to believe that's how that they would treat that situation?
Oh, yeah. I mean, Vince isn't so worried about flaming out at this point, right? He just wants to enjoy the heat, I guess.
And I love that Turtle's the only one that's getting laid in the car. These assholes, these schmucks.
He's gone, yeah. Fucking,
Turtles is the one.
Well, Turtle's an opportunist. He uses all that swag and all that shit that he gets to, like, I don't know, get ahead, I guess.
Oh, he leverages it, totally. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's definitely
he's the guy taking advantage of the car. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a manipulator. And it ends with them basically saying, "We need to go find some chicks at this party because we're all standing." And you know, drama is tripping that they're going to go back to Queens. Vince is assuring them that they're not going to go back to Queens. And eventually, they do go back to Queens, but just for a quick visit, right?
Yeah, I mean, I guess a quick visit.
Well, they have a couple episodes where they go back and see.
It's a dramatic. I think the one you're talking about is a dramatic turn of events. Actually, not unsimilar to what this is setting up, right? But that's later on.
So he gets
you're the next Johnny Depp,
and everything's good. And he's gonna go spend
$10 million
on a house that he doesn't have. It's crazy. This show, these little tags like that, are designed to hook you for the next episode, of course. But they feel really inorganic as I rewatch the show. I think they should have cut with them at the pool. Is it just me?
Yeah, I know. I do feel like I was ready to. That little tag at the end there was a bit much. I was set up to watch this entire show, you know, after that pullback yeah. from the pool at the party there. Yeah, that was like too perfect. It was like, damn, yeah.
That was nice.
I want to watch more.
Going back to Brooklyn thing. I love that.
But you do have to admit that this is a good episode as far as introduction. This is a good number two.
Yeah, this is a great second episode. This is really what gets you through the next one. The next one being the talk show and then date night. Mm-hmm. And then there's some goofy ones after that. But overall in the season, I would rank this in the top two. The pilot's a little clunky as we looked at it again. But this is starting to play in the world that they built previously.
Oh,
I
for
really
sure.
Like this one.
I mean, by the time you get to episode five, which is super fun. You're well into it. Yeah. Well, the next episode's good too. There's a good classic line of dialogue in that one.
And this one, like I said, had the let's hug it out, bitch scene. So there's a lot already. There's starting to be iconic things going on. And I loved that whole scene about the virginity talk in the wine shop. So good episode. I'm glad we're going back and rewatching these. Hopefully you guys are enjoying this too. That's going to wrap up our episode two look back at the Entourage season one episode of The Review. Speaking for Trevor Anderson, I am Jason Rugard, and we are the Movie Mavericks.